From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. He's been called a low-key bureaucrat's bureaucrat. He is the governor of Utah. And yesterday, President Bush nominated him to head the Environmental Protection Agency. But you might be surprised at how he views federal environmental regulation. Christy Whitman was criticized on both flanks for her leadership of the EPA. The left viewed her as part of a Republican facade of concern for the environment. Conservatives said she was soft and unwilling to fight for business rights. Well, there may be a new sheriff in town soon, prepared to move power over environmental regulation out of federal hands. According to the president, his nominee, Governor Mike Leavitt, respects the ability of state and local governments to deal with environmental issues and, quote, rejects the old ways of command and control from above. Tonight on Point, Mike Leavitt and the battle over control of the American environment. Earlier today, the Utah governor and EPA nominee, Mike Leavitt, addressed the Environmental Council of States in Salt Lake City. Joining me now is reporter Judy Fays, who covered today's event for the Salt Lake Tribune. Hi, Judy. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Judy, here's Mike Leavitt, and much of the country may not know much about him. Who is this governor who's now nominated to be head of the EPA? What would he mean for the EPA?
Well, I think that that's an open question at this point. I know that he does have philosophies that suggest that you can't solve problems if all you have is a conflict and people who are on polarized extremes, and that people need to work together to find solutions. Some folks believe that that means that he is totally in favor of allowing industry to do whatever it wants. That hasn't proven to be the case here in Utah. Some people say that means that he's too soft on environmentalists, and that hasn't proven true in Utah either.
So is this another Christy Whitman coming down the pike who's going to be torn between environmentalists and business interests, or is he likely to be more firmly in one camp or the other?
Well, I think that he probably is going to be more devoted to his philosophy of trying to solve the problems than he is to either one side or the other. He's not the kind of person who's going to come out and say, this is the answer, or at least that's the way he's presenting himself. He says that he wants Massachusetts to solve its problems and the northeastern region to solve its problems and the northeastern region to, say, talk with the midwestern region about air quality issues and how to resolve the differences in air quality plans and operations and enforcement of air quality laws.
So, Judy, he's got a reputation as a very smooth political operator, the bureaucrat's bureaucrat, he's been described, a man who may keep the EPA low profile as George W. Bush heads into an election season where the Republicans may see the environment as an area of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Is that Mike Leavitt's style? Is he likely to keep things smooth and easy and out of the headlines?
I suppose that's possible. I have to say, though, that the governor has stepped into the national fray on some issues, one of them being states' rights, another one being the Internet tax issue and whether sales tax should be collected over on Internet sales, not actually taxing the use of the Internet. So he's gone out and taken some unpopular stands and tried very, very hard to push policy on that. I don't know that he's going to be retiring from the tough questions. At the same time, I don't think he thinks he has the solutions for, again, say, the Northeast on all of these issues.
He spoke today just straight out of his fresh nomination to the Environmental Council of States. What is that group, and what did Governor Leavitt have to say?
The group it's a professional organization for the state directors of environmental quality in the 50 states. And I spoke with a number of directors who were there, and they unanimously said that they liked what they heard in terms of the idea of collaboration and problem solving and trying to find middle grounds and areas of common agreement and things like that. They seem to think that they're tired of butting heads with the federal government over a top-down approach to decisions.
But Governor Leavitt wants to move more power into the hands
of states. Apparently, that's why George Bush is bringing him in. This the idea of devolution of power away from federal control and closer to the states. He's been pretty sharply criticized since his nomination yesterday. The president of the National Environmental Trust, Philip Clapp, said he's in favor of less regulation, no matter what the cost to public health and the environment.
And I really don't know how to respond to that. I know that I think primarily what Mr. Clapp was talking about was air quality rules. And I know that in Utah, our situation with power plants is very different from the situation you have in the Northeast. Governor Leavitt has been successful at developing a regional approach to air quality issues in the West. I don't know if that translates into what happens in the East. And I have to say, at least on the Western Regional Air Partnership, you know, there was a legislative hearing a few months ago that would have helped dismantle this new federal regulation or attempted to object to it. And people from the environmental community, people from business community, and government all stepped up and said, we like this plan that we have. Don't change it. Please don't interfere. So there really was a consensus. It's hard to believe, but it's true.
So Mike Leavitt, a kind of a voice for collaboration, but of course that can mean all kinds of things. Judy Fays, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Judy Fays covers environmental issues for the Salt Lake Tribune. She spoke with me from Salt Lake City. So what does Governor Mike Leavitt's nomination say about George Bush's environmental policy? Is state control over the environment more effective than federal? Or is it a green light for local business interests and damn the consequences? Do you believe in state oversight and market-driven environmentalism? Or is that a smokescreen for no-holds-barred business? And how do you judge Bush's record on the environment so far? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Bozeman, Montana, is Terry Anderson, executive director of the Political Economy Research Center and a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Good evening and welcome, Terry Anderson.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Terry's author of the book Free Market Environmentalism. Also joining me here in the studio tonight is Kent Portney, professor of political science who teaches environmental policy at Tufts University. Good evening and welcome, Professor Portney.
Nice to be here, Tom.
Great to have you. Terry Anderson, to you first. What do you make of Mike Leavitt's nomination? What does it signal about where the Bush administration wants to go with the EPA?
I was certainly surprised by Governor Leavitt's appointment simply because he's been so popular in Utah, and I didn't expect him to be interested in moving to D.C.
Longest-serving governor in the United States.
Correct. But he is certainly a person who fits what the Bush administration has been about from the start and is an appointment consistent with many of the other appointments. I was involved as an advisor to then Governor Bush during the campaign, and it was clear in our discussions that he was interested in people who had pragmatic solutions, people who were interested in devolution, and certainly Mike Leavitt fits that description.
Devolution. This is the further push of power away from Washington to the states when it comes to environmental oversight. George Bush is a proponent. I think you are as well, Terry Anderson. What's the advantage, in your mind, of that move in power?
Let me begin by saying the first time I heard Mike Leavitt speak was at a conference at Stanford when he spoke eloquently on the whole notion of federalism, the idea of giving states power to balance that of the federal government, something that the Founding Fathers were very cognizant of, and Mike Leavitt spoke as if he were a scholar of constitutional history. And in that speech, he also indicated why it was important to think about what I've called environmental federalism, the same sort of redistribution of some of the power back to the states. I think it's a good idea, and I think Governor Leavitt thinks it's a good idea, because many of these problems are not America's problems. They are state or more local problems, and it's at those levels where people have a better understanding of what needs to be done, how it can be done, and how it can be done more effectively.
But there's often a concern that when you push power back to the states on the environment, you set up an unequal power relationship between big business there and state governments that you may end up with business having more leeway than it would have facing the power of the federal government.
And the argument is put in terms of a race to the bottom, that somehow each state will compete with the other state to attract industry and jobs by saying, come and rape and pillage in our backyard. Mm-hmm. We don't mind because we want your jobs.
What's your answer?
There's absolutely no data whatsoever to support such a race to the bottom. And the thing that I think needs to be understood is we are all environmentalists today. We may have different ideas about how we get to the environmental goals we have, but there are not citizens of any state, and I don't care whether you're talking about the old Rust Belt or the Sun Belt. These are people in the United States are not going to stand to have their environment trashed. They may say, in Governor Leavitt's case, we'd rather have a highway through some wetlands along the Great Salt Lake, where there are many wetlands to begin with. But they aren't ready to say, let there be pollution in Salt Lake or Bozeman, Montana. Let there be just rampant dispolation of the environment.
So everybody's green, but everybody's green, at least nominally today, but there's an awful lot that can go on underneath those covers. Kent Portney, let me turn to you. You hear the vocabulary here: pragmatism, collaboration, devolution, environmental federalism. These are the words that surround Mike Leavitt and his nomination. What does it add up to in your mind? Is this a pro-environment potential EPA head?
Well, if I believe the words that I hear, I wouldn't be too concerned, because in fact, we've had an environmental policy for at least 10 years or more that's consistent with that. We have some form of environmental federalism today. We have...
Meaning that the EPA is already not all-powerful.
The EPA has moved a long time ago away from wholesale command and control regulation. Mm-hmm. It did that starting under the Reagan administration, then under Bush the first, and then big time under the Clinton administration. So... we already have some degree of environmental federal regulation. To be a little more specific about it, whether you're talking about clean air or clean water, the states already have a significant amount of input into what goes on. The federal law requires that states prepare what's called a state implementation plan that gets approved by the EPA. And they get to express what they think is the appropriate way for their state to deal with environmental issues.
But that's happened since
the very first environmental legislation was passed.
We'll talk more about that. But top line, Terry Anderson says we're all environmentalists today in America. Let's say that so for a moment. Is it good news that Mike Leavitt might be the next head of the EPA, in your mind, for the environment?
I don't think it's particularly good news. I think... The issue is what happens in specific decisions. At what point are trade-offs willing to be made? In Utah, for example, it's easy to talk about Leavitt as being a protector of the environment, but there are a lot of specific instances where he made decisions that traded off the environment. One of those is the so-called Legacy Parkway project, where he wanted to build a major highway around Salt Lake City.
This is through wetlands, ultimately blocked by a federal court, but he backed the plan.
That's right. Now, the idea, of course, had the impact of damaging wetlands, damaging the environment. And the argument was, well, we can mitigate the damage that's done. But the fact is, in order to get the highway, he was willing to trade off some aspects of the environment.
Why is the Bush administration so eager in pushing more power to the states, Kent Portney?
Well, you hit it right on the nose. The fact is that when the states have the responsibility for it, they do less of it. They have less capacity to do environmental regulation, and many states don't have any desire to do it at all. The states don't have a resource base to do a good job of environmental enforcement when they have regulations. Now, there are exceptions to that. There are some states that would be even more aggressive than the federal government, like California. But by and large, the states don't have a particular capacity to be more aggressive than the federal government.
So we're talking about devolution, but in terms of evolution, going from Christy Whitman to Mike Leavitt, do you see that as becoming greener or less green?
Well, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference. I think what you have to remember is that the EPA administrator serves at the pleasure of the president. He's an administrator first and foremost. And this administrator, Leavitt, will do with less resistance what the Bush administration wants than Whitman did.
We'll come back and talk about it all. Ken Portney, Terry Anderson, stand by. We're looking at President Bush's new nominee to head up the EPA in the battle over control of the American environment. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the Environmental Protection Agency, Mike Leavitt, governor of Utah. And behind that nomination, the battle over control of the American environment, whether it will rest in Washington or in state capitals around the country. You can join the conversation. What does the new Bush nominee say about Bush environmental policy? And is state control over the environment more effective than federal control? Or is it a green light for local business interests and damn the consequences? Are we all environmentalists now? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Terry Anderson, Executive Director of the Political Economy Research Center, joining us from Bozeman, Montana. Here with me in the studio, Kent Portney, Professor of Political Science, teaches environmental policy at Tufts University. And right now from Salt Lake City in Utah, by Doug Fabrizio, producer and host of the radio program Radio West on public radio station KUER in Salt Lake City. Good evening and welcome, Doug Fabrizio.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks so much for joining us. Doug, what can you tell us about Mike Leavitt and why President Bush picked this guy? What's his reputation in Utah?
Well, Mike Leavitt's reputation in Utah, politically, I suppose, which is distinct, we need to note, from the national political landscape, is as a moderate. That he has – there's been a little bit of dissonance in Utah between the Republican governor, Mike Leavitt, and the Republican legislature because they're certainly much more conservative. So in issues – social issues, issues of the budget, funding for education, those kinds of things, Mike Leavitt is perceived more as a moderate. But when you look at the national scene, he's not at all a moderate. In Utah, he may be a moderate. Nationally, he's clearly a conservative. And I think the reason he was appealing to George Bush and the Bush administration is the fact that he can be more – will be more of a team player, at least perceived as more of a team player than Governor Whitman.
And does that hold true on the environmental front in addition to the rest of the political boardwalk, Dr. Fabrizio?
It does to some degree. I mean, Mike Leavitt, for example, he has – He told a story today at the conference you were talking with Judy about. Mm-hmm. He mentioned two particular bumper stickers that he has seen. One that said something like, "Earth first, we'll mine the rest of the planets later." And then he saw one that said, "Save the Earth, kill yourself," which he saw as sort of the two extreme views mm-hmm. of in the environmental debates. And he said, "I think I am, Mike Leavitt, I am in the middle of that. I think that's where most mainstream Americans, most mainstream Utahns are." And so he sees – he developed an idea and a philosophy, he calls it, in 1998 with the Democratic governor of Oregon, John Kietzhaber, called En Libra, which was this philosophy that would essentially – it means – it's a Latin word that means to bring in into balance. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to get the two extremes together. And so he tries to get the – not only the environmental extremists, at least as he sees them, but also conservative extremists, which in Utah is often land users in rural Utah,
right.
Together. And so he is perceived as a little bit left of center in that way. So he is seen
because
as a moderate
because of his
degree.
Style, because he likes to bring people together, get them to talk. His En Libra philosophy sounds very warm and fuzzy, national standards, neighborhood solutions, collaboration, not polarization, reward results, not programs, and so on. So he's got a smooth, kind of comforting approach. Terry Anderson, when you look at it environmental and push it out to national issues on the table today, do you think Mike Leavitt will be more focused on setting policy or on strictly moving more regulation to the states and letting them figure out what to do?
He certainly is going to push some of the solutions to the states, but I think he's going to also provide an umbrella under which or that will constrain some of those solutions. I think he's also going to be very much in favor of of market-type solutions. We don't want to put too much emphasis on this state regulation. Mm-hmm. I think that the Bush administration has certainly said from the outset it wants to look for market-type solutions. And even under Christy Todd Whitman's watch, some of that was coming forward. The water trading policy program of EPA was a giant step forward in reducing non-point sources, or potentially reducing non-point sources of pollution.
Terry Anderson, I'm not quite following that one. I should know it, but I don't. Non-point sources of pollution and water trading, this is an example of free market environmentalism?
The general term given to these approaches is called cap and trade. You say, here's the amount of pollutant we will allow.
Okay.
We will assign permits to people to go ahead and emit up to that level, and then they can trade amongst themselves to reduce the pollution or redistribute the emissions. The SO2 trading program under the Clean Air Act is the classic, very, very pragmatic, very effective solution to reducing SO2 in many areas.
Now, you saw the heat that Christy Whitman took. She tried to strike an acceptable balance in the midst of all these interests. Do you think Mike Leavitt can be more successful in that? And if so, why?
I'm not so sure he'll be any more successful than Christy Todd Whitman, and the reason is that I think that the political forces in the Republican Party are very much inclined toward viewing the environmental policy as a pendulum that during the Clinton administration had swung too far over to the environmental side, and now they believe they have the levers of power and are going to swing it back. And that's why my institute, PERC, in issuing a report card overall on the Bush administration's environmental programs, gave the administration a C-. We think that in many cases the politics have been such that even the rational voices in the administration, and they're certainly Christy Todd Whitman at times was part of that, are not going to be heard because it's, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
Ken Portney, what about that? Behind all the language and the checkered shirts and the blue jeans and picturesque settings for announcements, what's going on with the American environment? Is business running away with the store behind the environmental language or not?
The fact is that business would like to run away with the store, and they're trying to exercise the political power, if you will, to do it.
But are they doing it?
Well, that remains to be seen. They can't go very far under existing laws, under existing legislation. The EPA can only go so far in undoing what's called for in the law, but they can certainly do some things. Now, you know, the ultimate test is what happens when there are conflicts over specific environmental problems. What is a free market solution to that problem, and what are the environmental consequences to those free market solutions? I mean, many people argue that we ought to be pursuing these free market solutions, but they often advocate that even if it means a decline in the quality of the environment, or at least they're not addressing the issue about whether you can in fact maintain the quality of the environment and pursue free market solutions.
So in
a lot
view,
of that is still up in the air.
So does devolution of power to the states plus market environmentalism equal a less healthy environment or a healthier environment?
Well, it depends on how these things play out. It doesn't necessarily work one way or another. I would say that you have to keep in mind that devolving to the states is very different from free market. Right.
Mm-hmm.
With a free market solution, you're basically letting a market determine what happens. With devolution to the states, you're letting state governments decide what goes on. The two are not necessarily compatible with each other.
A free market solution brings, tell it to the buffalo. It doesn't necessarily inspire confidence at first blush, given our history.
Not at all. In fact, free market solutions can work very well, or they could work very badly, depending on how they're designed. And we don't know what kinds of free market solutions the Bush administration might want to pursue. I mean, we've had some free market solutions in place since the early 1990s mm-hmm. with respect to air pollution. And they seem to have at least not made things any worse. And yet there are still significant problems with air pollution, particularly with coal-fired electric utility plants in the Midwest. The Bush administration hasn't been particularly interested in pushing those those power plants to adhere to free market solutions. And in fact, they continue to pollute at high levels. There's a number of court cases involving 51 different power plants that are in noncompliance with the federal regulations.
So, Terry Anderson, I heard you in the background there objecting to my partly facetious reference to Buffalo. But what do you make of that?
Well, to the extent that the buffalo were totally unowned and hence subject to the tragedy of the commons, that's not exactly a market solution. And the reason that it differs from the SO2 trading program is that the SO2 trading program was an effort, if you will, to brand the buffalo and say, it's your buffalo, now you take care of it.
Its value is in your hands.
Exactly, and that's why the SO2 trading program has worked so well. There may be some exceptions, but generally it has worked well. And there are examples like that all around the world of water pollution trading programs.
Where market dynamics can work.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I keep hearing this notion that somehow the environment is deteriorating under the Bush administration. We can find wetlands in the Great Salt Lake that may have been taken out, or, you know, weren't, but would have been taken out to build a highway. Mm. But the fact of the matter is we have more forests, we have more wetlands, we have cleaner air, we have cleaner water. The environment is not getting worse, and it isn't going to get worse. And it really doesn't matter who the next president is or who the president is now. As Kent was suggesting, there are going to be those marginal cases where, yes, a wetlands gets removed, or, yes, we get a little more pollution in this area. But the environment has been getting better, really, for the last 50 to 80 years, and it was getting better under state control long before the EPA was a glint in the eye of any bureaucrat in Washington.
Ken Porter, let me put that to you. Do you agree with that assessment, that the environment is getting better and it's only going to get better still?
I think that's a blanket statement that you'd have a lot of difficulty supporting. Some respects, the environment has gotten better, and in many respects, it's gotten worse. We know, for example, we have lots of evidence on issues related to greenhouse gas emissions, for example, that suggest that we've done that things have gotten much, much worse. So in localized sense, perhaps things have gotten no worse. It's also true that I think that we like to fool ourselves sometimes into thinking that things have gotten better. The Bush administration issued a report not too long ago touting improvements in water quality that turned out to be wrong. They simply misled everybody concerning the quality of the nation's drinking water supplies. So when you look at it, what seems to be actually happening, it's a little bit harder to support the argument that Terry just wanted to make.
I want to turn to our callers. Jim's calling from Plimpton, Massachusetts. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'd like to bring a couple of specific examples into the discussion. There's
All
been
right.
some pretty good general ideas, and I think it's important to understand who this Governor Leavitt really is from an environmental point of view in terms of some of the specific things. And I'd like to mention two examples
Let's
that
hear
I'm
them.
Personally familiar with. Before he was governor, his family had a significant trout hatchery business in Utah that was responsible for contaminating much of the area with what is now called whirling disease and is responsible for a lot of expense in trying to cure and control it. After he became governor, everybody in the Department of Fish and Game at Utah who had filed claims and had brought up that information was released from their jobs. This doesn't sound to me like a fellow who's interested in collaborating in partnerships.
Let me pick that one up right there just for a second with Doug Fabrizio, if I may. Doug, do you know this story?
Oh, yeah. It's a well-known story. This his family, Michael Leavitt, in fact, was the director of the Road Creek Ranch, had a 1/7
interest. This is the trout hatchery?
This trout hatchery, mm-hmm. commercial trout growing farm, mm-hmm. Owned by the Leavitt family. He as soon as he became governor, well, no, as soon as he became a candidate for governor, he resigned and sold his interest in it. But as your caller says, there's still some suspicion about, you know, the governmental relationships related to that story.
And did it lead to trout disease somehow? I mean, it doesn't sound like a trout hatchery would want to have trout disease around.
Well, no, it did lead to trout disease. I mean, it was a sort of it's a wasting disease. It's a fish mutating parasite, basically, first discovered, I think it was 1991, and it's still having some effect in the trout growing, in the trout populations in this state.
And did the Mike Leavitt, as governor, then go after the environmental regulators who had raised flags about that problem?
Well, he said he – the governor says he recuses him, has recused himself from that. But the caller does make a good point that there is still some suspicion that he had his hand in it. He says that he has not and has sort of backed away from it.
And, Jim, you had another point.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that whirling disease is – he certainly didn't, or his family didn't, introduce that on purpose. That was not an intentional thing,
of course.
But the second thing was with the legacy highway. When the highway was proposed, they refused to consider a number of alternative routes.
There were this is the highway along the wetlands near Salt Lake City.
The east coast of the bay that goes right through the prime internationally important wetlands of the area.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three routes that were proposed, and they declined to accept the other two alternatives, which would have avoided the wetlands problem. And then they also declined to consider any alternative transportation, public transportation, mass transit, and so on, and locked in on the most environmentally most threatening route that was there. And then he vigorously fought through the Senate and through his own state government, the EPA itself, and the Army Corps of Engineers, as well as the Coalition of the Friends of Great Salt Lake, which is a very broad-based a coalition of environmental and community groups in the area, and he's fought them for a long time. And his solution to the highway issue was, on one Saturday, he invited many of the members and leaders of the Friends of Great Salt Lake to the governor's house mansion for an oatmeal breakfast, in which he proposed the improvement would be changing the name to the Leavitt Memorial Parkway rather than highway.
Jim, hold the thought. Doug Fabrizio, take us into that one. Did the governor fight so hard for a highway that would be on or near the wetlands, and why? Pick it apart for us.
Well, there were the caller's completely right. I mean, there were essentially three proposals that were presented. The one proposal that the governor endorsed, as the caller rightly mentions, is a highway plan for the eastern shore. It's the one that essentially would have had the greatest impact on those very critical wetlands.
So how should we interpret that when we look at Mike Leavitt's environmental instincts?
Well, I mean, he and his administration, as the caller has fought with the federal government, with the Environmental Protection Agency, with federal regulation. And in fact, that fight is not over yet. The governor is trying to go ahead with more environmental studies. He's still hoping to get that road. And that's one of his initiatives he hopes to accomplish.
And is his push on economic grounds, that it's not economical to build the highway elsewhere and the impact will be acceptable in environmental terms? Is that the idea?
Exactly. He has suggested there is this parkway that it would be essentially a refuge, that you could mitigate the environmental problems, in essence, which most the Army Corps of Engineers, most environmentalists, biologists who have looked into it say that's not the way it works. But he seems to think it can be mitigated. He seems to think that there is a compromise there.
Doug Fabrizio, stand by. Terry Anderson, Ken Portnoy. Jim, thanks for your informative call. We're talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the EPA, Mike Leavitt, governor of Utah, and the battle over control of the American environment. You can enjoy us and join us at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. So I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the EPA, Mike Leavitt, governor of Utah, and the battle over control of the American environment. My guests tonight are Kent Portnoy, from Tufts University, from the Political Economy Research Center, Terry Anderson, joining us from Bozeman, Montana, and from Salt Lake City, Utah, Doug Fabrizio, host of the radio program Radio West on KUER in Salt Lake City. You can join us as well. How do you judge President Bush's record on the environment so far? Is there always a good compromise, even collaboration, to use a favorite word of Mike Leavitt's, between business and environmental interests? And do you believe in market-driven environmentalism? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Ed's calling from Chicago. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi.
Hi. Good evening.
I guess my comment is this moving the environmental
protection to the state sounds a whole lot like, no environment left behind, or the same thing they're trying to do with Amtrak, which is basically they're just trying to move the tax burden away from the federal government.
Ed, you doubt that states will want to have good environments, will take steps to ensure the quality of their local environment?
Well, I think some states will, but I think you'll have some states that, some of the third world states like Texas, which has the worst environmental record of any state. I mean, and basically, I guess my whole point is that Bush basically on nearly everything is, well, as they say in Texas, he's all hat and no cattle. He's just talk.
So talk on the environment, and you fear that devolution of power, regulatory power over the environment to states will simply mean less regulation.
Yes, I believe the Bush administration is motivated by money, and greed, and I would like to use the word sociopathic, and I think that they're a threat to our environment, and the only really solution to this is to get them out of office as soon as possible.
Ed, we've got your perspective loud and clear. Terry Anderson, you know that this suspicion of devolution is out there. How do you answer it? What do you say to concerns like Ed's?
Well, my answer is one that I gave earlier. The data are simply on the side of the states. The biggest improvements in environmental quality came under the watch of states, not under the EPA. And contrary to what Kent says, I just think the data are unequivocal. And I know he can find some exceptions. There are always exceptions in data. But the trends all show the same thing.
But what's the dynamic?
Air quality in Pittsburgh was improving dramatically before EPA and has not improved nearly as much since the EPA as it did before.
Now, why would that happen? Explain the dynamic for us, Terry Anderson. Why, in your view, does state regulation work more effectively? Why would it? Why does it? Than federal?
It happens for two reasons. One, because as we as citizens have gotten wealthier, we demand more environmental quality, and we're going to get it. We're going to get it whether it comes from our local city councils, from our state legislatures, or our national governments. It works well at the state level because those of us in our local communities and in our states know where the problems are, and we go to the source of those problems. The water cleanup that really stopped the burning of the Cuyahoga River was not because of EPA. Those were state and local regulations that brought that to bear. The second point, again, one I raised earlier, there is simply no evidence of a race to the bottom. Now, you can say Texas is the third world environmental state. We have to come up with some measure that would tell us which state is the worst environmentally, but the fact of the matter is there is not a city in this country where you would not turn on the tap and drink the tap water. It is very good water. Now, maybe it has a little too much of one thing or another. Certainly in the arsenic case, there is no problem with arsenic in most rivers in the United States, and this is a perfect example of why devolution would be better. Imposing the kind of arsenic standards that the Clinton administration wanted to impose on a state like Montana is simply ridiculous.
In economic terms, you're saying because there's a higher level there naturally.
We have a higher level, and it comes out of Yellowstone Park. There is absolutely no evidence of health risks from that arsenic in the Madison River, let's say, and yet little communities that would be far better served purchasing more hospital equipment or ambulances would do much more to improve the health of those communities than they will if they have to meet federal standards that are blanket standards.
Kent Portney, let me put that to you. Here's our caller from Chicago saying he's afraid. You give all the power to the states and the business is going to run away with it. But Terry says, look, that's just not the way it works. Citizens see what's going on. They pay close attention. And it's better off if states are dealing with their own problems. You earlier raised a concern that states might not have the enforcement capacity or the resources to adequately track these things. So how does the dynamic work when it moves from federal to state?
Well, I wish I was as confident as Terry is that the states would do the right thing with respect to the environment. I agree that people increasingly demand a cleaner environment. But as a point of fact, most people don't vote, for example, on the basis of environmental issues. Certainly that's not an issue that George Bush is terribly concerned about in the next election. He feels like he can do whatever he wants with respect to the environment. He's not going to lose much in the way of votes for it. Now, the issue about state and local initiatives establishing a unequivocal record of improving the environment, that is simply untrue. It's really hard to find much of any serious environmental legislation at the state level before the involvement of the federal government. It's very difficult to imagine that that the quality of the water would have improved as much as it has under a scenario without the EPA.
But at this point, are there advantages to moving regulatory oversight back to the states, given the evolution of the environment that's gone on?
Are there advantages for the environment?
Or do you see that as a net loss, as a kind of zero-sum net loss? Anytime the EPA loses power, the environment loses quality.
Well, I think, again, it varies from state to state. There are some states that would perhaps be a little more aggressive, but they are far outnumbered by the number of states that would prefer to do much less than they are now. And what they're really saying is they think that too much emphasis is being placed on the environment relative to other things they'd like to achieve. If the bottom line for you is that you'd rather see other things achieved than protecting or improving the environment, you might be in favor of a wholesale devolution of authority to the states.
How much more power is there to be moved from the EPA to the states if President Bush pushes this all the way with Mike Leavitt? You said earlier that there's already been quite a devolution over the last couple of decades. How much more could go? Might the EPA end up relatively powerless?
Well, I think it's probably safe to say that if the Bush administration were serious about this, they'd have to seek substantial changes in the federal legislation through Congress to achieve it. And that's a much more difficult thing to achieve than asking the EPA administrator to begin changing on the margins the rules and regulations that govern what it does. There are some things that the EPA can do to pursue, for example, more market-based solutions without changing the legislation that exists. But to really make wholesale changes would require congressional actions.
No matter who the head of the EPA is.
Exactly.
Carolyn's calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Carolyn. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I have a couple of questions. The one on devolution, though, let me address that first. I'm worried about the fact that the predominance of national public lands, parks, etc., happen to be in Republican states.
Because they're in the West.
Yeah, because they're in the West or up in the Arctic Wildlife Reserve where, you know, the federal Congress has not been able to get drilling rights there. But if the power gets more and more toward the states, is this a way of, you know, giving that power to big business?
So you're wondering if those national resources would become vulnerable if regulatory power devolves to the states around environmental
our
controls?
National treasures. I mean, there's nothing like seeing Old Faithful. There's nothing like seeing Yellowstone. These national treasures, I think if we don't have the national oversight, that we are in big problems.
Let us pick that one up first, Carolyn. And Doug Fabrizio, you must have seen this question come up there in Utah and obviously in the West. Don't these lands remain protected under federal law, whether or not you've got devolution of power to the states?
Well, they do. And I think that there's an important point to be made about all of this, which is that when you ask the question of how far is the Bush administration willing to go, the answer is however far the Bush administration wants to go to some degree. There are federal regulations in place. But I think the thing we're learning is that Mike Leavitt may not be a factor at all because, I mean, I think the Bush administration has learned its lesson, at least the people we're talking to say that with Christy Todd Whitman. That is, they don't want question marks anymore in the way their Environmental Protection Agency administrators are going to behave. Mike Leavitt was chosen because he is of like mind with George W. Bush. On the question, as Kent Portney mentioned, greenhouse gas emissions, global warming, land use policies, Mike Leavitt has said, despite the fact that he paints himself something of a visionary in terms of collaboration regarding environmental policy, he is going to do the bidding of President Bush. It's not going to be really much of a question. So if President Bush and the Bush administration decides that they want to push it towards the states, it's not going to be Mike Leavitt that's doing it. He's going to be administering that particular policy. I just should say maybe also that there is also the argument, though, that if Mike Leavitt wants flexibility, he's going to have to gain the trust of the administration. So he may be able to sort of push it a bit, sort of be a little bit more collaborative, try to sort of use the En Libre model nationally, as he's trying to use with some success, some not so successful in some ways. He may be able to do that if he gets the trust of the administration, but right now he's going to do what he's told.
But that puts a kind of this warm, compassionate penumbra around environmental policy, whatever it may be, in Mike Leavitt's style. Carolyn, if you're still there, you had another point. I don't want to lose it.
Yes, and that was I'm concerned about, again, state regulation of things like air pollution. Air pollution doesn't recognize state boundaries. And if air pollution from another state crosses a state line and affects me, I, in my state, will have less power to do something about it than if there was strong federal regulation.
Well, clearly some things have to remain at a national level. Carolyn, thanks for your call. Terry Anderson, how about that? In this process of devolution, ideally, where do you see the country right now? How much further should power go to the states, in your view? And what remains is kind of irreducible federal responsibility?
I think I agree with Kent that there will not be a huge amount more devolution simply because, as he correctly pointed out, it would take major legislative changes. The devolution will come in such things, as I mentioned earlier, the water pollution trading program of EPA, which is a policy out of EPA that doesn't require congressional action, can be implemented. Simply that kind of thing is where I think Governor Leavitt will push the margins. And so for people like the caller who's very worried, then, you know, you'd be worried about Governor Leavitt. When it comes to the interstate issues, I don't think Governor Leavitt or anybody else who talks about environmental federalism ignores that. And in fact, most people who discuss these issues in any sensible way understand that on those issues that cross state borders, you need to have some kind of compacting amongst the states involved to deal with the issue. But it is simply not true that all of these issues cross state borders.
Mm. And Doug Fabrizio, you know the Democrats are looking to make hay out of President Bush's environmental record. Joe Lieberman today called it the worst environmental record in history and said the Senate should not confirm Mike Leavitt or any nominee who shares the same disregard in Lieberman's words for clean air, clean water, land conservation, and global warming. What's the talk in Utah? Any real roadblock to Mike Leavitt sailing into the EPA chief seat?
You mean among the Utah congressional delegation?
Well, I mean, ultimately, in Washington generally.
Surely this will be the scene upon which candidates for president will talk about or criticize the Bush environmental policies. So this will be their place. I think most agree, though, in the end, Mike Leavitt will be confirmed. It may take a while, but most seem to agree that he will get there eventually.
And with that, we're out of time. Doug Fabrizio at KUER in Salt Lake City, thanks for joining us tonight.
Great pleasure.
And Terry Anderson at the Political Economy Research Center, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure as well.
And Kent Portney right here from Tufts University, thank you so much for your time.
It's been fun.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Thank you. Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate